Hey, everyone. Welcome back. This is episode 2 of Neon Static.
How's it going? We're back. We've done it. We're recording episode 2, and my lord, it's difficult.
Can't get rid of us that easily.
How's it going, guys?
It's going.
Yes.
So we're back for our second episode. We wanted to thank everybody who checked out the episode, the first one that we released. I guess without too much ado, we want to get right into the episode. We're going to start it off with a little segment we have called Anonymous Tip. So this is where we're going to talk about our listener questions and feedback we got from anybody. And for this episode, we didn't really have too much. We got some good positive feedback from folks. A couple people said they really are happy to have a new voice in the net space. So that's cool. We've got one bit of feedback from somebody we asked for. And we are also kind of always asking for discussion topics and questions and feedback and corrections on mistakes that we made, especially when it comes to rules and things like that, or a take that we have, although I'm not sure if we're a strong take-based podcast. I don't know.
And I really don't want to be corrected on mine.
Yeah, right.
I'd like to persist in my incorrectness.
Got it. So, yeah, much in the same way that other podcasts do. I think Slumpscast has a habit of, at the end of theirs, saying, if you have corrections or feedback, there's no way to get in touch with us. Yeah, just don't share it. Constructive criticism is welcome. It is welcome, but don't be a jerk. So this is Vest from our local Discord. They said, I really enjoyed Metropole's kind of tier list of Corp and Runner decks, but I'd also enjoy even just like a, this is X Runner and here's what their ID ability means and does and how it could function in the current card pool or whatever for like a discussion topic. So that's one of the things that we had sort of had kicking around for ideas for podcast episodes and main topics. So easy include.
Yeah. Yep. Our list is getting pretty big of potential topics.
Mm-hmm.
This game has so many things to explore. All right, cool. Well, let's move on to our 24/7 news cycle.
Yeah, so there's a new ban list, which doesn't really impact me because I have yet to play a game of Standard, but makes me look at Standard longingly and think, maybe life would be better without the boat. So it was 3 new cards, Cabanesa Wu, Netspace 4. Thrill Seeker, 4, I can count. Endurance, the much beloved boat, Nana Civic Grid, and Drago Ivanov. So they all seem interesting. It's actually kind of disappointing. I was looking forward to playing maybe with Wu, but oh well.
Wu's cool, but the World Tree deck seemed like it was problematic.
Oh, for sure.
I think World Tree is still good without Wu. I'm still excited to play World Tree.
Definitely, but like it'd be really fun to play the OP combo. So
yeah. Do you want to explain how it works to people or?
Sure. As far as I understand, we should caveat, we're not Standard players. But the Wu deck, you know, she has an ability, click search your stack for a non-virus program and install it, lowering its installed cost by 1 credit, then shuffle your stack. And if that program is still installed when your turn ends, remove it from the game. And because Shapers have a little card called Self-Modifying Code, which lets you spend 2 credits and trash it when it's installed, search your stack for a program and install it, you can use Wu's ability to go get a Self-Modifying Code and then trash the Self-Modifying Code to put the World Tree down, which I guess this is more of a lesson in how Wu works than World Tree, but she enabled you to get your 1 World Tree down on turn 1 very consistently. And then she had like 60 to 80 other single copies of other programs that she might want to get and other things, not necessarily all just programs, but yeah, you could just go tutor out whatever you wanted. So,
well, and then there's this thing, Harbinger.
Yeah.
Which 0 cost, 0 MU, and it's just when this program would be trashed, turn it face down instead of adding it to your heap. That seems very good.
We got a Harbinger. Huh. All right, anyway.
Yeah. trash it, quote unquote, with World Tree, and the Harbinger gets turned face down.
Why is Harbinger in there?
Well, there must be a reason it's in there.
Oh, just because it costs 0 just and then you can use World Tree to get a 3 discount on it.
Right. It's okay. A program. It costs nothing to put out. And then you go get something for three less.
Okay. That seems neat.
Yeah. You get the Harbinger for zero. Oh, the Harbinger is the fuel for the World Tree. Okay.
Right. Right. Because you have to do the World Tree when you already have something on your board because it's at the end of the run or after success.
Right. The Harbinger is the fodder for World Tree. The SMC gets the World Tree. Then your Harbinger's out. You all have to do this mid-run because World Tree is the first time each turn you make a successful run, you can trash one of your other installed cards to go search your stack for one of the same type.
Right. It's one of those things you learn the first time you don't put down a card before you try to do the whole combo, and then you realize that World Tree doesn't do anything.
And that was us learning how World Tree works in a deck that we can't play.
Yeah.
Legally. We can play it in Eternal.
Yeah. We should spend our whole time talking about banned cards that nobody can play anymore.
Exactly.
So, but that kind of highlights what is so cool about this game. It's what's so appealing about it for me when I get a new set of cards to look at or even explore older ones in light of new cards being released. The interactions of like what you can pull off, like coming up with the Harbinger as fodder for it. Like somebody just was like, oh, what can I use? And then, I don't know, maybe it was obvious immediately, but that's kind of a cool little kickflip that someone came up with for the interactions of those rules.
I like the Mayfly combo with World Tree.
Yep.
Use Mayfly to break, to make the run successful. And then before it would trash itself, you sacrifice it.
Yep.
And that one also is free because you can install that with Woo for a -1 discount.
Oh, that's
right.
True.
Yes.
Seems good.
Neat. So anyway, Woo is banned. You can't play her at all.
It's a lot of talk about a card that, yep, no one will ever see again.
And Endurance is also banned, and that's fine in Standard. We'll be exploring that space more soon, I think, after our startup tournament. We have a handful of more people getting into the format, at least getting the card pool. And I'm not sure exactly how do we approach the transition. I think that it's probably just going to be, the way one eats an elephant, one bite at a time. What, Nick, have you never heard that?
No, I've heard that. I'm just trying to figure out how that will work in practice. Are we adding one card or one set every week? Is that is that how we've broken it down into bites?
I was thinking more like play a game or two, a meetup of Standard, but you could do it incrementally if you want. I mean, you can just start with Startup and then add a couple cards.
It's more like how you eat a Tootsie Pop.
In three licks and a crunch. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
if you're an owl, anyway.
A one, a two, a three.
Exactly.
Endurance is gone, and that's fine. Great. Nana Civic Grid is a cool card, but I guess these Ag Infusion decks that would... Are you guys familiar with what this was?
Yeah. So Ag Infusion gave you... Basically, the runner was approaching on one server, and you would kick them over to a different server. And Nana Civic Grid, if I'm remembering correctly, is the one where you can reveal a face-down piece of ice to resolve one of its subroutines. Is that correct?
In Archives.
Yes, in Archives.
Oh, God.
Yeah. The Ag Infusion deck would have like one remote, right? And then protected centrals, especially Archives. You'd also put a Nana Civic Grid on Archives first and then probably a remote second. And then if they ever ran anything but your super nasty remote, then you would boop them over using Ag's ability into your one of the two servers, probably the remote that has the Nana Civic, and then you can just fire a subroutine at will without them getting a choice.
Because when you trash the unres piece of ice, it stays face down.
You would turn a face down piece of ice face up in Archives, and if you do, you resolve one subroutine on the ice.
Right, but what I'm saying is the ability of Ag Infusion, when you trash the unres piece of ice, it stays face down when it goes into Archives, right? So that way you can use Nana Civic.
Oh, I see. You trash the unres piece of ice. Yes, it fuels the combo, yeah.
Right.
Sorry, you were one step ahead of me.
And that card, for some reason, has 17 influence. Apparently, they thought that was weak.
Yeah, Ag's good. Ag is a tournament powerhouse.
Well, maybe it was weak until... It got Nana Civic.
No, Ag's been a threat for a while. It's been in the tournament meta for a while. I don't know why 17 influence, honestly. Yep, so that's Nana Civic's ban, and then the Drago decks were for Reality Plus decks that would just tag you and tag you and tag you, and you'd have to eventually you know, pinhole threading their Dragos out from behind fun houses and other ice. And then you would spin doctor them back. And because Reality Plus just keeps tempo with that. I think this is probably all, we're not really the podcast that you should be going to for this information, obviously, but Reality Plus is the first time each turn a runner takes a tag, gain 2 credits or draw 2 cards. And Drago, you put Drago out and he lets you do advance, and then spend 2 advancement counters to give a tag to a runner. So you can use the first 2 clicks every turn to give him a tag. You get 2 credits back, and then you have a click with something else to do. And then the runner has to click and 2 credits. They have to spend effectively three credits or clicks worth of value getting rid of the tag, while you only spend 2, and it's just, they could just spend so long doing that with a single action to spare every turn. It kind of made the game sort of sad and not fun.
All right. So enough about things we won't see in tournaments.
So I heard, I can't remember where it was. I don't know if this was just speculation, but I thought that I heard that Null Signal, even though they haven't to date done a ban list for startup, that because Endurance is so strong and it's basically an auto include for nearly every deck, that they're thinking about or talking about what to maybe do about Endurance in startup.
They are watching it.
Watching it. Okay.
That's all they've said, that they're keeping an eye on it. It's in that ban list article. Before we get into it, a brief note on the startup format. We are continuing to monitor startup and follow tournament results and player reports. While there are some strong cards that see wide play in many decks, this is unavoidable in smaller card pools. The metagame seems varied and healthy, and we are not considering it necessary to take any balancing actions at this point.
Okay.
Also, it's a, you know, it's a short card pool, so like things will rotate faster. So yeah, if it's a problem now, it won't be a problem in a year or less.
Yeah.
We also had the 2023 National Championships announced, which is cool. They are allowing, this is a change for this year, although we wouldn't have known, up to 3 per countries are being allowed depending on the country size. And us as residents of the United States are in one of those said countries that is large enough for 3 different national championships. One of our local organizing powerhouses, Dan B., has already put in the request for a Philly National Championships. So a couple of us, we're at least going to try and make it out for that. What's the plan? Nick, are you thinking about it?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. It's just a matter of timing and getting time off work and all that other fun stuff. But yeah. No, it sounded fun. I mean, people were talking about like taking a train down and playing Netrunner the entire way down. And like, yeah, all right, I'm in.
It combines both of our podcasts.
Trains and Netrunner.
Trains and Netrunner.
And Netrunner.
I actually did that to, so the reason I had suggested it was because I did that when I went to PAX Unplugged, and that was a lot of fun. Not having to drive for 6 hours and instead get to play games that whole time was pretty cool. I saw the announcement and I saw the Hush playmat, and I've never wanted to be better at Netrunner than I do right now, because I have no chance of winning that playmat. It looks really cool.
It is quite neat. There are 5 of them in the regular kit. So if you make top 5,
yeah,
you know,
that's all you need to do.
You know what? You could just get everybody sick like the night before and right. No, don't do that.
Like I said last time, if our tournament's 8 players, I'll be lucky to make the top 8. So
good to reuse the jokes.
Yep.
Was that all the news that we got?
I think so.
All right. Well, let's move it right along to our next segment, and that is Focus Group. All right, Focus Group is where we are going to talk about, what we've done is we've picked a card, and every episode that we do this segment, we are going to pick a card, we're going to read the card, and then we're going to discuss the card and talk about ways that we think it is cool, or interactions that it has that are fun, or anything else about it that we want to talk about. Nick is going to lead us off with a landmine of a pronunciation kind of card.
Listen, I got the guide open. Saya Benhar Gantulga is a 1-cost resource for 3 influence out of Anarch. It reads, when your turn begins, you may choose a server. during the first encounter each turn with a piece of ice protecting the chosen server. Whenever the corp would resolve a subroutine, instead they resolve, do one net damage. So I have been using this after getting it used against me to basically break into any one ice server I want. And of course, you can run other things, steel skin scarring, things like that, that you want to discard. But in general, just taking, you know, this big scary piece of ice, or even like an early end the run ice, like an ice wall, and turning it into discard one card at random is really, really powerful. It makes it a lot easier to break into pretty much any server you want to. Out of the Anarch deck, I've been playing a lot of like Botulus and Mayflies and things. So not a ton of like traditional breaker suite stuff. And just the idea that for your server to be safe, it needs to have at least two levels of ice. And the second one has to be the end the run. If I slap a Botulus or something on it, it might have issues even with that. So it's been fun for just all out aggro, always be running kind of stuff.
I guess there's two options off the top of my head for like fueling this thing. Cause one of the things you have to deal with is steadily losing cards, right? So you need some card draw. And in Parhelion, there's a Zenith chip. Every time you make a successful run on a central, you get to draw a card.
Yep.
So you can run on centrals with Bonhar and then get the Zenith chip draw. Or if you are in standard or in the NSG only format, there's DreamNet, which is the virtual resource that, you know, first time you, each turn you make a successful run, draw a card. And if you have at least two link, or if your identity is digital, you also gain a credit. So, you know, you're fueling that by itself, which is kind of cool.
I'm assuming you're running Marrow and or Hippocampic Mechanocytes and then some sort of passive card draw like Earthrise or?
Yeah, so the deck that I have it in, actually, I don't think it's running Earthrise. I have Dr. Nuka Vriolik out of Shaper. For some burst card draw, steel skin scarring. What else? Oh, Raindrops Cut Stone. Raindrops Cut Stone with Benhar is amazing because if it's just a one ice server, it just replaces whatever you are discarding in terms of card count in hand. Because Raindrops Cut Stone, somebody I'm sure can find
it. Yeah, it gives you a card for every subroutine that resolves. So for every net damage you take due to Bonhar, you get one back from Raindrops Cut Stone.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
And it's when the run ends too, so it doesn't need to be successful.
But you have to survive the dice. Yep. If you run into an Ansel and you have two cards, Raindrops Cut Stone won't help you.
Nick had put together an Asa deck that is Bonhar based, and I'm running a version of that in the NSG only tournament that's online right now. And I've got some Raindrops in there as well. But the card in Uprising that is kind of a cool enabler is it Flip Switch? Flip Switch, I think. I don't know. I haven't played this, but in theory, right? You can install a Flip Switch. You can jack out on demand. So if you run something with Bonhar and then get through it, or on that first one they res and it's like too much and it's going to kill you, you can Flip Switch out and not die. So you can go like very aggressive and not flatline yourself, which seems...
Yeah. So anyway, it's been a lot of fun just to run your face directly into any ice you see and just shrug it off.
Do you have any way to recur stuff from your heap?
Nope. Or you just run three of these.
No, I'm saying you're losing a lot of cards. You just don't need them all, or?
Yeah, basically.
Just run good cards.
Yeah. Just if you run good cards, you will tend to draw good cards. Pro tip.
And discard them as well.
Yes. But those are cards you never drew. They were blank when you drew them. You didn't know it, but they were.
You just have to pretend.
Sometimes. Yeah. Exactly. I will say it is much easier to bear on Jinteki, where they just invisibly leave your hand, than I bet it will be in person, where your opponent is pulling them out of your hand and throwing them into your heap and laughing as they see the value they've just gotten out of your card.
I will do that if I discard one of yours.
But it's a thing worth talking about a little bit. That whole concept of just like being okay with losing some cards. Nick's deck that he's running, the cards that I would consider him like really hurting if he lost are like his three finalities maybe, and then possibly the Shatuskas.
Yeah.
But other than that, like everything is expendable in that list. Like, you don't want to lose all of your no free lunches or something when you're worried about dying because of, you know, tag and bag, but maybe you dial things back a little bit, or, you know, there's botulists that you want and fermenters and stuff, but all these cards are good enough. And with the basic setup of the Banhar and like a Mayfly or a couple botulists and in key places, you can get through most stuff. And the idea obviously is to close the game up before it gets too hard to get into stuff and you need more, you know, more cards to get through.
Right. And the other thing is that you control basically when you are taking the damage, because it's only when you're running at something. So you can look at your hand at any, you know, given point, at, you know, at the start of a turn and say, all right, I know I can afford to take this much damage because here's the here's my installs or my card plays for the turn. That leaves me with, say, three cards in hand. So this server's out because it's got a four sub ice on the outside or something like that. You know, like I found it very easy to get my hand down to the point where I looked at it and said, all right, I'm okay losing any of this, and then run stuff freely.
Right. You play the card you care about first. And
exactly.
And then you run.
I mostly care about the fact that as the runner, when you trash cards, they have to go face up. So you're not just losing cards. You're also revealing a lot of information to the corp about what they do and don't have to worry about.
True.
Yeah, I think the way it ends up playing is so all-out aggro that it becomes pretty clear when I play. I think against Eric, I played a Finality turn one. It becomes pretty clear that I am not in it for the long haul very early.
Yeah.
So, all right. So next up, we've got Accelerated Beta Test. This in this section, we're going to talk about the decks that we have been playing lately and what we're looking forward to testing out shortly. So, Johnny, what have you been playing lately?
I've been stuck on Thule and Kit. So Thule was really strong when we first started. I think I won my first 8 games in a row with it. And then people started learning how to play around it, not running on your last click, making sure you have 4 cards in hand when your turn ends, making sure you don't run without 2 credits in hand, etc. And I still think it's a good deck. I have wanted to test swapping cards out here and there, and I think I just keep making it worse, but it's hard to tell whether I'm just making it worse or everybody else is getting better or some combination. I know everybody's getting better, but I'm kind of cooling on that one because it's not winning games and when it as often, and when it does, the games aren't very fun.
Yeah, having fun is a big part of playing a game.
Like, it's just it's a slow deck, and
it's
it
a
basically just starts off by amassing a huge amount of wealth and then putting and resing whatever ice I want and stopping the runner from doing anything until I can manage to get some core damage on them to score ontologicals out of hand. And it's, yeah. And it doesn't always work. And when it does work, it sometimes takes a while. And it's just not that fun. So I'm not sure what I want to play, but nobody's really playing Wayland. So I'm thinking I might do like some ob deck or something.
I'm playing Wayland.
Well, I haven't played against it. Maybe once.
Not ob, though.
So I might do something like that. I also put together a Kit deck. And I
This is cool.
I put it together from scratch, and I really like the idea of it, but I don't think it's that good, at least not in the current meta. It's like, it's cool when it works, but it's hard to get it to work. And basically what it is it's Kit running Hyperbaric and Endurance, and then cards that provide charges like Stoneship Chart Room, First Net Cat, and what else provides charges? I think that might be it.
Stoneship Dig. Yeah, that's it.
But it's cool because Hyperbaric, for those that don't know, it's a decoder. And when you charge it, it keeps its strength. So over time, your Hyperbaric gets to be strong enough to break through anything that's a code gate. And Kit's ability is that the first time each turn that you encounter a piece of ice, you turn it into a code gate. So early on, it can apply a decent amount of pressure. If you get Hyperbaric out early, you can get through pretty much any server with a single piece of ice protecting it. And then later in the game, I have three egrets in the deck. And so the goal of it is to basically wait until the corp, if I can't win before the corp gets their scoring server set up, to try to get the egrets out into their scoring server to turn everything into code gates and just be able to walk right through their scoring server and pull agendas out as they try to play them. And it's worked a few times, but it requires a lot to set it up. And it's very fragile to rig shooting. You get that hyperbaric built up and it gets trashed and there's just no way to recover from that. So in certain matchups, it's just really, really bad. And again, in other matchups, it's just average, I think. But, I thought it was a cool idea and I've had fun playing it, but I'm probably going to move off of that one as well. But I have no idea what I want to play. I want more runner identities in startup. Play Sable, but I feel like Xayah is probably the stronger criminal identity right now.
Well, that's a good segue. I've done a little Sable. I've done mostly like exploration and runners because I was playing Padma with Spark of Inspiration and KCT, whatever, the K2CP turbine. That one, the turbine, and just bowed, and it's very good, kind of boring. You know, you find your stuff, whether it's boat first or it's usually boat, and then slowly you build up your doom rig, as Derek likes to call it, and then nothing can keep you out, and you know, you have stone ships that so you don't die, and etc. So I was exploring other things and explored Sable a little bit, mostly because there was some question in our local Discord about, you know, like the mark, not question, but people were saying, yeah, the mark as a mechanic is too inconsistent to be good. And I was like, oh, I don't know. Sable seems pretty good because you can get your deep dives off natively with, you know, two accesses. So I explored that for a night or two and that was kind of fun. But I also, that deck does require a lot, as does Xayah, like run-based economy. If you can't get in, then you get shut down because you have no money and you're just struggling. So, I don't know, a couple of games with Nick's core incompetency is my version. I like that a lot. That's a lot of fun. So I don't, maybe two or three more games and I'll run into some major hiccups, but I'm having a good time with that. And then I've mostly been playing a super modernism based built to last Wayland deck with the modern take on the classic deck, where you're trying to get tags through public trial. You are killing people with public trail. I've consistently made this. I can't count how many times I've made that mistake of calling it public trial. Because in my head, the theme is they're putting them on trial. So they're tagged for some reason. I don't know.
I just have one request. Let's not put a ding into the podcast episode every time you do it.
I won't. Yeah, people will get mad. End of line to kill them. I have snares in there for doing extra surprise damage and tagging, and it's just good fun. And also, it can score agendas if the runner's not going to die, if they're running very carefully. You can just score out pretty quick. So,
yeah,
those are my decks.
And I had a hard time finding a corp deck that I enjoyed playing or that I understood how to play. And the first one that's really stuck with me it's called Shoot the Moon. It's up on Netrunner DB, but basically it's a near Earth hub asset spam deck that just puts out a ton of recurring value in the form of assets that are pretty expensive for the runner to trash. And then you build up one scoring remote off of the tempo that you're getting from the fact that you have bladderworts and pad campaigns and all these other things just feeding you money. And you use that along with Sansan City Grid to score a bunch of things pretty quickly. It is a bit of a grind of a deck, although less than Thule. But yeah, I have heard reports that it is not very fun to play against, but I am having a blast playing it. So
I thought that was
bad.
Supposed to be a fast advanced deck, though.
No, so that's the one that I was trying first, which was out of Pravdivost. That's more of a straightforward fast advance. You've got, you know, a seamless launch and gaslight to find your seamless launch and things like that. This one with Near Earth Hub, where every time you make a new remote server, you draw a card. it allows you to go really wide with, and then basically invite the runner to spend all of their clicks and econ tearing apart your build, at which point they will eventually gas out, whereas you're still drawing cards from installing things and making passive money off some of the assets that they can't afford to trash, all while filtering with the daily business show. It's very good.
I mean, the Shoot the Moon deck is a fast advance deck, but it's like intermittent fast advance. It's got the moon pools, and you
that's true.
You put it, even says in this little deck guide, which is, by the way, this is published ZN Solomon, first Net Brummers startup tournament. Congratulations, ZN Solomon. But he's saying, you know, they are saying install moon pool behind a piece of ice, and then do install advance a 4-2 agenda, and then res moon pool and get it, you know, scored out of hand.
Yeah. So moon pool, by the way, is a card that I underestimated. It can do a lot of the same things even better that like Spin Doctor does. And it can also be a fast advance card. It's a weird card, but the more I used it, the more I like it.
Yeah, same. It's pretty cool. I'm exploring some PE decks that make use of it too. The cool thing about Moonpool is that you can use it both for fast advance and for dealing with the Agenda Flood. Foreshadowing. We're going to talk about Agenda Flood. And you can also use it in a trap deck when someone's running a trap. Right before they access it, you go access. They go, yeah. And you go, okay. And then you raise your Moonpool and you put two more advancement encounters on top of your Cerebral Overrider or your Urdurka Cipher or whatever it is and kill them, which is like, and they have no chance to jack out at that point. They must access the card. It's cool.
I was strongly considering playing that deck until I heard that Nick was on it. I don't want to play the same thing, but
why not?
I was very much a fan of NBN Fast Advance a few years ago when we were playing, and I saw this deck posted and I was like, ooh, NBN Fast Advance, I should give that a shot. And then I think within like a couple hours of that, Nick posted something on our Discord saying, I'm going to try this deck out. I was like, God damn it.
You can do it. There's other variants of this too. Or even if you like just change three or four cards, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Just play a worse version of Nick's deck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what we've been playing lately. Let's briefly touch on another segment we have called Spec Work. This is where we're just going to briefly talk about some cool rules interactions that we have encountered. For this episode, we have the interaction of Logic Bomb versus Funhouse, also known as paid ability windows versus on-encounter effects. This was a question that came up during a game that we had, and the question effectively, let me just read the cards real quick. Logic Bomb is a zero-cost resource. It is a virtual resource. You install it and then trash it for the ability to bypass a piece of ice you are currently encountering. Lose any remaining clicks. That's an Atom card. It costs 5 influence. It's a nasty, it's a big include, but it's a strong effect. And then Funhouse, which most people should be familiar with, is a 5-cost code gate piece of ice. When the runner encounters this ice, and the run, unless the runner takes one tag. So that is the critical thing there. So when you hit a Funhouse with a Logic Bomb, the question was, can we use the Logic Bomb to bypass the ice? Because you are currently encountering it. And I was wondering if the wording of currently encountering versus when the runner encounters, you know, what comes first, chicken or the egg kind of thing. And the answer effectively is, if you look at the timing steps of this, first you approach the ice, then there's a paid ability window, then you res the ice, then you encounter the ice. At this point, the runner must take a tag or end the run. And then there's another paid ability window. You can use the paid ability window to fire the Logic Bomb. So you can't, it's the fact that there's no paid ability window during an on-encounter effect, so you can't use that.
Right, it's only cards that have previously been paid. So like Inside Job, you play it, you've already basically paid for the ability, so you don't need the paid ability window to fire it. So Inside Job would bypass Funhouse without triggering its on-encounter effect.
Well, it has its own on-encounter effect. That's why Inside Job works, because it says, bypass the first piece of ice encountered during this run. So you encounter the ice, you have that effect. It doesn't say on encounter, but that effectively means the same thing. So,
and the priority there is important because it's the runner's turn. The runner's effects take priority in terms of resolving. So when you encounter it, inside job goes off, you bypass it, and then you're no longer encountering it for the funhouse ability to resolve.
And that's it. That's the rules thing. That can be confusing when you start playing. And even when you've been playing for 200 something games, apparently. So I guess we're still a little rusty. Shall we move it along to the main topic?
Yeah, let's go into the depths. We want to talk today about an issue that has come up for all of us at some point. And every time it happens, I feel like I can't do anything. So this is specifically talking about agenda flood. So this is basically when you draw or mulligan into so many agendas that you can't progress the game because all your cards are scoring cards. You need defensive cards or econ cards or whatever to actually be able to start making up ground against the runner. And you just start to get picked off by the runner. So it's a difficult situation because you feel vulnerable. You know, you just like, if you don't have any ice to protect HQ or anything, you're just sitting there with all these bombs for the runner to set off on you. And you're also so many of your slots for cards in hand, which are normally the resources you're playing out, are just taken up by these cards that don't do anything to help you win the game at this point, you know?
So it's my opinion that there are many times when, especially newer players, but even like medium players, like not, you know, I consider myself a medium skilled player, where people may think that they are agenda flooded or claim that they like couldn't do anything about it. They just got into a situation where they were flooded. But that's probably because they were not being proactive about it or willing to take risks and deal with the problem proactively. And we're going to talk about at least some of the things that I think one can do to at least try and deal with it, and some stuff off the top for understanding what's the likelihood statistically of drawing an agenda and the makeup of your agenda suite and things like that, because it's important to understand. So Johnny, you said you've come up against this problem a lot recently, right?
Yeah. So you say that a lot of times players will say they're agenda flooded, but they're just not reacting to the situation properly, and that there is something they can do. And what I'm hoping to get out of this, because I've had two games recently where I drew four out of my five starting cards were agendas, and, you know, maybe I top decked like a hedge fund or something. I can't remember, but it was non-ice. So I had four agendas. And then after my mandatory draw, zero ice. What do you do in a situation like that? Because if you just draw a bunch, you know, maybe you draw into some ice and then you can protect HQ. Maybe not. Is there a point at which agenda flood can't be, you can't course correct and you just scoop? Or do you think that there's something even in a situation like I'm describing where there are avenues of play that can actually get the corp out of that situation and put them in a position where they actually have an opportunity to win the game at all?
Johnny, specifically to a situation that came up in a game that you and I played, I believe I had that exact draw in one of our paper games last week, four agendas and something else. And you ran HQ, got an agenda, and then said, correctly based on the math, the odds that there's another agenda in there are super slim, and stopped running HQ.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So at that point, right, you were just successful enough to put you off the trail, basically. So you started running R&D, which I had already pulled out like half the agendas in the deck because they were all in my hand and things like that. I think after a couple of turns, it became clear when I was drawing cards and not doing anything that I probably had nothing in my hand other than agendas. But at least for a couple turns, it gives you that opportunity, that little bit of breathing room, if you're willing to let some of it go. You know, I mean, yeah, the runner's going to get ahead of you on points and everything, but it gives you a little bit of safety to draw up, discard down even, you know, if they're not thinking that you're discarding agendas, it can be a lot easier to try to get some momentum going.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, what Nick said is one of the points that I was going to try and make is that runners, they want to get set up, right? It's not a generally good game plan to go hammer HQ four clicks on turn one. They do have some information based on what you did, And that's point one, is that like hidden information and keeping cool in that situation is important, I think. If you draw, install a piece of ice over HQ, that's kind of signaling, but it might be, if it's a good enough piece of ice, it might save your butt for a bit. But I want to take a step back first and talk about agenda flood in general and what it is and what it isn't. So on average, right, from just some numbers, there are 8 or 9 agendas in a 49 card corp deck. So that's statistically 1 in 5 cards on average, so is an agenda. Yeah.
Quick question on that. Is that actually true in startup? Because startup has far fewer 5-3 agendas. Yeah. I think most of the decks that I built have been 10 agendas. So the math is about the same, but even then it's really easy to end up at 11 agendas or something like that. I think 8, I don't even know if you can do 8 in a 49 card deck, right?
Because I have 10 in 2 of my decks, right? 10. Okay. So 1 card difference.
Yeah.
Still,
it's, huge,
it's roughly 1 in 5.
Yeah.
Unless you are playing a high agenda count, low agenda point kind of deck, like a Thule or a PE deck or something like that, generally you'll see like 13. So that's closer to 1 in 4 cards. So that's just something to know, right? When you're, if you do like the hyper geometric statistics on this, the odds of you getting, in Johnny, in your Thule deck, 4 cards in agendas in your opening hand of 5, there is a 1.35% of that happening, percent chance. So, you know, that's 1 in 100 games that's going to happen to you.
I had it happen in 2 out of 2.
Well, then you have very bad luck. Statistics are not evenly distributed.
I know.
But if you do end up in that situation, keeping cool, the runner is very unlikely to just keep hitting you over and over. And also in Thule and in PE, in those decks where you have lots of little agendas, you have designed the deck to have lots of them because they have a purpose, right? You could, for example, put 3 agendas on the table, face down, runner doesn't know what they are. They run 1, steal it, great, click in 2 credits. They run a 2nd, maybe they get a core damage on turn 1. And you have now turned on your ontological dependencies. So, like, you gave up a little ground, but now you're in a better position. But it enables PE's death by 1,000 cuts and shell game strategies as well. Those decks generally want to see more agendas by design, I guess is my point.
Yeah, so one thing I brought up earlier, right? If you have 10 agendas in your deck and you've already drawn 4 of them, R&D is pretty agenda light at that point. You can forego protecting it. You can also probably draw reliably into something to do. So whether that's your mandatory draw or just spending clicks to draw, it can be really useful because it's improved the reliability of your deck to give you an asset or an operation that you actually want to play on your turn. So your future draws are less unpredictable. You have more opportunity to move things forward in the future. Doesn't always help right now, but there you go. Mm-hmm. Of course, you include spin doctors. Like, I think that goes without saying. The other one, I mentioned this earlier, but Moonpool can function as a quasi spin doctor. So obviously it costs 3 to res, but it will allow you to mid run, if you want to, take 2 agendas out of HQ, put them into archives, and then shuffle those into R&D. So if the runner is coming after your hand, you can use stuff like Moonpool to ditch it mid-run and go from there, where you've now basically reshuffled where everything is, and that allows you to have more control over what the runner can possibly be seeing when they hit something. Obviously not the most value out of Moonpool, but it is something that you can do as like a more expensive, different version of Spin Doctor.
Right? There's a really fun trick out of Ob that I've seen where if the runner has gotten through the server, the remote server, and is about to steal the agenda that's stolen in there, the Ob player can cause a trash on a 1-cost card to put a Spin Doctor into the server, overwriting the agenda, which kicks the agenda over into archives, and they can't get it. And then before they access the Spin Doctor, they use it to pull it back into R&D, which is an amazing trick.
Oh, wow.
It's not really like an agenda flood trick. It's just like the best, though. Do you guys think that we play any decks ever without 3 Spin Doctors? Or is that just a permanent influence tax? And what does a corp deck look like without 3 Spin Doctors? Moonpool
don't think
is
you
one
ever
option,
play
right?
Without 3 Spin Doctors.
Yeah, can there be any deck that doesn't need it, though?
Even if you have Moonpool, I don't think so. I mean, Spin Doctors, 0 res, cost draws two cards. It gets cards back into our... I mean, there's nothing that's as good. Moonpool's great, but it's not even close to as good as Spin Doctor.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
I think you have to have three. There has to be a very, very good reason to not run three.
Yeah, I looked. In most corps, there's like three. I think it's like Spin Doctor... And I'm trying to think of what the other card was, but there was one that let you go card positive in terms of draw.
Oh.
So even if all you're looking for is card draw, which is just a generically good thing in most card games, although it's weird here because of agendas, Spin Doctor does the job. But it also does so much more by allowing you to reuse things and hide agendas and bluff servers and things like that. It can ruin your opponent's dirty laundry. There's just so much stuff.
Sure can. I mean,
and just the fact that it's on demand. Like, once you play it there, you can trigger it whenever you want, basically.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be rezzed before, you know? You can always, pretty much always. I don't know. Are there any situations where you'd get stuck having missed a window to trigger Spin Doctor?
Only misplay. I think it's just misplay.
Right, yeah.
I guess Light the Fire.
Yeah, but I mean, if they're light the firing a Spin Doctor, yeah. I'm kind of happy.
You're very happy.
Yeah.
Because then you've baited them into some really bad, like they took a core damage for nothing.
Yeah, for my zero cost card.
Right. It would have to be a blanking effect, I think, for it to not be effective.
Why would Light the Fire prevent you from trashing Spin Doctor yourself?
Because the card text is blank.
Yeah, if the Spin Doctor is in the root of the attacked server.
Got it.
Yeah, I'm talking about them running a Spin Doctor with Light the Fire, mm-hmm. which is a misplay. Or you know, you've put them in that.
Or you baited them, yeah.
Right, you baited them. Sprint, I was going to mention, is also like an Agenda Flood tech kind of card that you could use for that. Usually it's just draw cards, right? But if it's draw three cards, shuffle two of them back into R&D, so...
Isn't it shuffle two cards from your hand back into R&D? So it's not two of the cards you drew.
That's right.
Okay.
So it's a way to clear agendas.
Yep.
I don't know that it's necessarily used very often for that. It is usually like I'm searching for the combo piece that I want.
Yeah. It's almost like a simulation reset, you know, reverse order, but similar type of effect.
Right.
Yeah. I always think of simulation reset as like kind of a reverse mulligan. You know, it's just taking the stuff out of your hand, putting it back into the deck, and you redraw.
Isn't that just a regular mulligan?
Kind of, but you end up going one card down because you don't get to redraw the simulation reset. Like, you end up paying a card to draw however many, you know. You can't end up even at five again.
It's a taxed mulligan.
Yes.
Yeah, but still good.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so that was just a Spin Doctor tangent. Other things just that we can do as players positively to get out ahead of Agenda Flood is to just try and start scoring some. Let's assume that your hand is like three or four agendas and a piece of ice. If you can put that piece of ice down in a remote and, you know, ice, it install, advance, and just hope at that point that the runner can't get through that piece of ice. Hopefully it's like, you know, an ice wall or something. And that you're not up against an inside job. But like, if you can score out an agenda, especially one that moves you forward in the game, like an off-world office or Oaktown renovation or anything that is good with your game plan, like if you have a Project Atlas with a counter on it or even a hostile takeover, which I guess you would just score that out of hand entirely because that's a 2-1. Mm-hmm. But, you know, House of Knives, False Lead, depending on what your deck is trying to do, if you can make that happen and score that agenda early and turn on part of your strategy, that's useful and is worthwhile doing.
Yeah, if it's not something like an off-world office and you draw into four or five agendas on your first hand, it's difficult. I think it's difficult to try to score those right away, as much as that would be the best way to get at least one of those into your score area. I think in a lot of cases, if you're not recouping that money with something like off-world office or Oaktown renovation, you may put yourself in a position where you can't recover your economy because you've now spent all of your money scoring one of those agendas, and now you have three others, and that means you probably don't have a lot of other cards. You know, you can click to draw a bunch on your next turn, but scoring that on your first turn or even your second turn may put you even farther behind, despite getting a few points.
Well, I mean, so, you know, you say you can't recover, right? You can always recover. It just takes time. And if you have drawn a bunch of agendas, you could be in a bad position where now if they run your hand, they could steal two, but maybe that one was important enough for your game plan that that's the one you really wanted to defend. There are reasons why that is a positive thing to do in certain situations. It all depends on the deck and what the agendas are. But even if you score a critical agenda and then just spend two turns clicking back up, the game is waves of, I have the economy and the cards to do certain things now, step back and build up my resources again. And it's a constant like ebb and flow. And that's another thing is if like later in the game, if you have a bunch of agendas, you can use one to bait the runner into, and they have to drag them through a server. They steal the agenda. Hopefully it's a less impactful one, but then that opens up a scoring window for you to put the more impactful one in and score that one out while they're rebuilding their resources. So using an agenda and trading them, but hopefully in your favor, is another way to deal with having a lot of agendas as well.
Yeah.
Related to the deck strategy that I've been trying since I started playing the game. Go wide with them. So if you just lay out a bunch of new remote servers, even without protection from ice or anything, it does cost the runner something to be able to through those servers, right? It costs them clicks and things. And, you know, if even one of those is a trap, or if your deck includes traps, then they're going to have to think twice about it. The other thing that I've been thinking about with that is that if you have a hand that is mostly agendas, and you think the runner has access to any sort of multi-access, so jailbreak, legwork, things like that, each run at a remote server can only get one agenda at a time, whereas if they're running your hand, they can hit multiple agendas with legwork, you know, by looking at three different cards or something. So all those are kind of considerations for why it might make sense to throw a bunch of agendas down, undefended, and just hope one of them survives to the next turn that you can score out then.
Yeah. One thing that I've noticed, and maybe this is just our local meta, if you put a card down unprotected and you don't score it on your next turn, it's assumed to be a trap. I've let agendas sit for the entire game unprotected because somebody figured, oh, well, that was a Nightmare Archive that just, you know, didn't pull me in, and now it's just stuck there. And I just leave it there to be that final point.
Yep.
When the runner's not expecting it.
Yep.
Yeah. And another alternative is using defensive upgrades to protect stuff. If you have access to those instead of ice, you know, you can use Manigarm, Skunkworks, Antimatic Void, Corporate Troubleshooter for an older throwback. That requires some ice, but it can stop the runner pretty well. And even stuff like Hokusai Grid, Nana Civic Grid, Zato City Grid, all those things can help keep the runner out for long enough to score the agenda. And then importantly, we didn't really talk about mulliganing, but you can avoid flood at the source by mulliganing with care. If you are the corp and you are looking at kind of a middling hand, you always have to ask yourself, but what if I draw four agendas? Like, is this good enough? You really have to, I think, have to approach taking the mull as the corp player a lot more seriously than a runner. Maybe that's just me, because runner, worst case, they don't get the right things now. They can't end up with like a ticking time bomb in their hand like the corp can. So
I don't know that I agree that you need to take it more seriously on either side. Nick and I were talking about this. I think I drew a hand and I looked at it and I said, could my hand be worse? And I think Nick was like, that's a great way of looking at it. And I still decided to mulligan, and it was worse. But I think that's probably a good question to ask yourself before you mulligan, because you're more likely, I think if the answer is yes, it could be worse, you're probably more likely to get an equal or worse hand than you are to get a better hand.
Yeah. And I mean, the likelihood matters too, right? Me and Eric played a game the other day where Eric drew five agendas as his opening draw.
In a deck that had 10 agenda cards in it. So
what'd you say, like, that was like 0.02% or something
0.066.
Yeah. I had it wrong because I had 9 agendas in the hypergeometric, but let's see what it says now. It is 0.0132%.
Yeah. So
it's very, very unlikely.
But yeah, I mean, you can always draw that. But like, you know, that hand is not going to get worse. Even if you draw back into four agendas and a card that does literally anything but score your opponent points, it's going to be better than what you got the first time. The thing that I generally look for, at least on the corp side, is like my first turn in the hand. You know, maybe I'm looking at it going, all right, I've got one thing to install here, so I can draw a card, install this, and then do something else. And, you know, not have to discard anything down. You kind of plan off of that. And even if it's not like, okay, my first turn is I'm going to end it with 12 money because I'm playing a hedge fund into this other thing, into Planogram or whatever it is. You know, just having some plays, I feel like, is better than having good plays for the like early opening hand. And you don't have as much risk. You know exactly what you've got, as opposed to the mulligans in this game drive me nuts because the odds are exactly the same as your opening hand. So I'm so used to other games that let you put those cards aside and then redraw. So yeah, it's definitely something that's taking a lot of getting used to, though, because you can't just say, all right, well, I don't need these cards. I'll get something good instead.
It's probably better, though, than letting people kind of curate their opening hand too much.
Yeah, I guess it all depends.
Or at least, if not better, it maybe makes it more variable and exciting.
For sure.
I think that's it. I think that the mulls in this game end up, they can put you in positions where you have to dig yourself out of a hole. And those, for me, tend to make the more memorable games.
And they also communicate a lot, particularly as the corp, where so much of what the runner is trying to do is figuring out where you are. You know, are you agenda flooded? Do you have a ton of assets that you just laid out and you're waiting to res, you know, your Maryland campaigns or pad campaigns till the start of the next turn? Just seeing a hand and going, yeah, I'm going to keep this, is like a sign of, yeah, this hand has stuff for me to do that will advance the game state. So, you know, it can all be part of that like bluffing game that you can play kind of on the side of the rest of the game as the corp.
Yeah, like if you draw into five agendas and you keep it, there's almost no chance the runner is going to assume that you have five agendas in hand.
Until you draw three cards and go, ah, dang.
The odds on that were one in 7,575 games. That's how often that happens.
So it's bound to happen eventually.
It's bound to happen every 7,575 games.
On average, yeah.
On average. Do you guys have anything else you want to say on mulls and agenda floods and all that good stuff? No.
Nope.
We are shaking our heads. We are answering no.
It's very useful for an audio medium.
You've been listening to Neon Static. This is a podcast that you have enjoyed. I believe it. It's been great for everyone involved. Thanks for listening. I've been one of your hosts, Eric Hayden.
I've been one of your hosts, Nick Mason.
And I've been your final host, Johnny Hollander.
Final host. That's a new genre of horror movies, like Final Girl. Anyway, thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this, you can get in touch with us from any of the links in our episode show notes. And we are around the place on Discord. You can find us on Canister on the Discords. We've got Johnny's Triforce Legend and Nick is Gullbrander, which is a book reference. It's a book reference, right?
No. It's a, I believe, Icelandic word that I found.
What does it mean?
Did you just look
sort
for
of
words?
The king, I think. I was naming characters in an MMO at the time.
Sick.
And you just Googled words, and this came up on some list of
words. I just Googled Icelandic words, and Sword of the King was one of them.
Sick.
So there you go.
I like that. Well, get in touch with Gullbrander, Sword of the King, and tell him all about how awesome of a job he did on talking about agenda floods. Thanks a lot, everybody, and stay tuned for episode 3 coming up in a few weeks. Good night.